Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. So in podcast 506, we are just kicking off June. We're getting closer and closer to summer in the upper Midwest. It's been crazy here in the broadcast bunker tonight with all kinds of things happening. Machinery going on, planes landing, people running around. We're kind of a late night crew here at the broadcast bunker, and there's a lot of things going on, so things have calmed down a little bit. And I want to do kind of a fun podcast because so much of the stuff being discussed is silliness. The gorilla, email scandals, this crazy political stuff, which I think people are starting to tune out. I'm going to talk about that a little bit. And I want to talk about what really no one is talking about these days, and that is the world that we are in the process of creating. To the extent that 2016, the world that we know now in 2016, literally will not exist in 20 years. Doesn't mean that we're all going to die. It doesn't mean the buildings are going to go away. It means that the way we live and the way we do business in 20 years is going to be completely different, I think. And I don't think we're prepared for that. And I want to talk about that in a fun way in podcast 506. Well, I'm going to talk about business in this podcast, and one of my long-term sponsors, Ryan Plumbing and Heating, does a lot of business service. And, you know, when I do these commercials for clients of the Bob Davis Podcasts, a lot of times the commercials are directed to, you know, individuals who listen to the podcast. So if you're a homeowner and you've got a plumbing problem, you call Ryan Plumbing, right? Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, you can call 612-927-6488, and they go metro-wide from St. Paul. And of course, that means the suburbs too for four generations. You know all that. But what you might not know is if you have a business, you probably also have air conditioning, heating, plumbing, needs, whether they're emergency problems, which really have to get fixed in business immediately, or whether it's stuff that you're like, we got to get this done at some point. I would urge you to think about Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They do a lot of business stuff. They do residential, of course, but they also do a lot of business stuff. They're on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol. They've been there forever. Again, for business, think Ryan Plumbing and Heating. In St. Paul, you call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, you call 612-927-6488. It doesn't matter where you are in the metro. They can get a plumber to you. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Metro-wide from St. Paul, and of course, that means the suburbs too. And thanks you guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Now, I love technology, and so a lot of what I'm going to talk about in this podcast involves technology. And I'm probably going to do two podcasts very quickly this week in the first week of June, because there is some political stuff. But I just want to say that most of the political stuff won't really be worth talking about until after June 7th. June 7th, as I mentioned in a previous podcast, is really the end of the primary season for the presidential preference primaries, with the exception of a couple of territorial caucuses and primaries for the Democrats. And, these 24-hour cable news channels and radio stations just have to build, they have to fill airtime, and they end up having to talk about things that are a complete waste of time. And people aren't talking about what I feel people are not talking about really important things because we're too busy getting caught up in these other things. You know, maybe there is some kind of a weird subconscious parallel between the gorilla and the political. Maybe we're saying that the political realm is a zoo and that we feel that we've fallen into the moat in the gorilla exhibit at the Cincinnati Zoo. I don't know, but, it's so frustrating because I don't feel that we're making progress in the political discourse. And there are things happening that are, to me, are amazing. And so I mentioned my love of technology. So I'm going to talk about this because the reason I'm doing this is normally I would have said I'll do a podcast about the latest establishment Republican, flight of fancy, which is a third party candidate, which is insane. I'll talk about that in another podcast. And I was going through all the news and I ran across three or four stories that I don't even know if they're related. So don't expect something great in this podcast in a sense that I don't think it's going to be profound. These are smaller stories and they don't tend to be profound. But I think if you look at them as building blocks of a new world, then it begins to have a little bit more impact. So just three or four things that caught my eye, and I really do wish we were talking about them. I suppose if we were, that they would be snarked to death on Twitter. We would much rather talk about other kinds of issues. But I believe that almost all of the assumptions that our politicians and planners and leaders are making about our world, and I mean specifically the United States, but by extension the rest of the world, are based on old thinking. And they are conclusions that are going to be very quickly eclipsed or obviated, which is to anticipate and bypass something that would be necessary or to make something no longer necessary. What would these things be? What is the current mindset that would be obviated by technological developments and their consequences? Well, first of all, the fact that we don't talk about these things makes their impact greater and even more surprising, even shocking, when we finally realize them. Secondly, it's the mindset that most people have because most of our leaders were born in the 1940s and 50s or soon earlier, like 1930s, and their mindset is based in the 20th century. And in some cases, their mindset is really subconsciously based in the early 1900s, the early 1900s American city that probably didn't even exist in the 1900s, but it's we've got this image in our head that is something that we kind of pine away for in some ways. So I'm going to start with the first story, which was in a blog called Curbed. This is an urban blog from, I think, L.A. It is certainly no bastion of conservative thought. And I was surprised to see in this not bastion of conservative thought, Curbed, I was surprised to see a long piece about how the driverless car is going to change the urban landscape and very few cities are prepared for it. And it completely, I think it does goes a long way toward demolishing this vision of the American city as people thought it was in 1923 in Manhattan or in parts of Chicago or parts of San Francisco. 2 weeks ago, I did a podcast about Minneapolis and St. Paul's Metropolitan Council, and it's been emulated by other cities, but we have a council here in Minneapolis and St. Paul that's appointed by the governor that has state power. It has legal authority to conduct pretty extensive planning, which cities have to sign on with. And I interviewed a small town mayor who has figured out that there's two statutes that need to be amended or repealed to deal with the power of this council. I also learned in the process, and some people might be surprised to hear this, state power over cities is greater than federal power over states because states have something called the 10th Amendment, and cities don't have the 10th Amendment. So they don't have any real recourse against an overbearing state power in the form of a Met Council, and I find that fascinating. So the result of this, even if something like the Met Council, for example, is considered to be politically liberal, you end up seeing plans developed which are based on some very old ideas. They're based on this central city development idea, trains and streetcars, high-density housing, high-density subsidized development. What do they call that? Regentrification, moving poor people out of neighborhoods to regentrify old buildings. High-density housing, I mentioned, highways and transit systems, which all point to downtown. And in the case of trains, they can't be moved or adjusted once they're built. So you end up having to build lots of train lines, and they're very expensive to build. Central planning structures basically direct resources. So they direct tax dollars and legislative initiatives. Some might say they malinvest or they divert unjustifiably these resources to projects that envision the 20th century city, either, as I said, from the early 1900s or the 1950s. This, you know, sort of almost utopian vision of city center and people going to work in the city center and living and working downtown in the city center as they did in the 1920s when things were wonderful, and going to the chocolate shop and going to the crystal shop and buying the tablecloth from the, you know, the whatever the store that sold the tablecloths. You know, people living and working and commuting from already dense, transit-fed, semi-suburban neighborhoods with vertical apartment buildings and multi-use on the ground floor to more dense vertical office space downtown with parking and recreational spaces. And the idea that everybody's going, all roads lead to downtown, which, as I'll tell you later, they don't. And then you have parking garages and office space and other things managed by city government and Uber planning groups with tax increment financing for development and lots of tax breaks for bringing your office in, for bringing corporate offices into the city and so forth. And in a state like Minnesota, they will say, you know, we enjoy this tremendous economic success in Minnesota because of this. But sometimes just because you have a great economy in a state isn't necessarily caused by this kind of planning. Because the question comes up, well, what if this vision is wrong? And this is where we get back to the Curbed article, because the Curbed article, in a very innocent way, talks about the driverless car, the autonomous automobile. Now, we are told increasingly that we are 50 years away from such a thing. It will never work. It will never come about. It is a pig in a poke or a pipe dream or any of this. Too many problems. But as the article points out, scientists and technologists, as well as corporations and entrepreneurs, are already discussing car design, the economic impact of robotic cars, and how mass introduction of these tools, and that's what they are tools, will change our lives. So the guy that wrote the article's name is Kinder Baumgartner. It's from Houston. And what happened was the city came to him and suggested that he do some planning for the freeway system. And he asked them, should I do some planning for the driverless car? Because it looks like we might have a lot of them by 2035. And the city said, yes, we need you to plan for the potential of a driverless car. Because if we have a lot of driverless cars by 2035, it's going to change the urban landscape significantly, because it's going to change the need for large freeway systems. And let me tell you why he says this. Autonomous cars will need less space because they use managed lanes. They can go faster with less width and length for each car. The cars have higher safety thresholds, so everything can be more compact, which means you need less space for freeways. You need less space for parking garages because you're not going to leave your car sitting in a garage all day. You're going to need less space for parking lots at shopping centers. Baumgartner believes autonomous cars are going to create huge pools of parking garages and parking lots, which will be empty. So huge pools of open space at these parking lots and shopping centers and freeways. You won't need a car in the suburbs. You won't need the garage in your house as much as you do today if you have a car or two. You won't need to park the car on the street anymore. Suddenly, even in the suburbs, the streets will be clear. So what are you going to do with that space? Now, there's a bunch of cars parked on my street. If people didn't need cars to go to work, then what do we do with that space? And I'm not saying that all of a sudden this just appears, this space, but I think it's interesting that people are thinking about this. Well, the truth is that freeways will shrink considerably, according to this article, and it makes sense. Again, a lot of these parking garages will end up as what he calls feral space, wild space. And he also said, I don't expect development of this space to be centrally planned because it's going to be far too much space for parks and recreation and states to reclaim it. It will cost too much. Now, think about this, and this is really important when we consider the planning of these over, I like to refer to them as Uber agencies. People do not work downtown. Most people work in various rings around the cities. They are not going downtown. They are taking trips to different locations across different parts of the city at different times, whether their yoga class is at 4:30 or they go to the Costco at 7 a.m. or 4 p.m., whether they work the third shift or the second shift or the first shift at a hospital down on 169 and Hopkins Crossroads. Autonomous cars may provide transportation to these different trips more efficiently and cheaper than trains or even buses. And yet, what are we doing? We're investing billions in that kind of infrastructure, in light rail. We're investing billions in transit and personnel for transit. Or in some cases, we're investing in heavy rail like the North Star Line or some of these big city transportation systems where they do have high density, like New York. Well, as long as we're talking about business, I'll actually talk about ex-government cars and exgovernmenttrucks.com, now open in Forest Lake. They've got the big ex-government car mega center where you can drive through this huge lot and see the selection that they've got there. Because if you're in business and you're looking for a work truck, an SUV, a van, or more, then exgovernmentcars.com is the place. This is where Mobile Podcast Command came from. I've had three Crown Vicks. I'm on the third one. It's got 115,000 miles on it. Thing has been great. Ex-government cars gets these fleet-maintained government vehicles, the Fords, the Chevy, the Dodges, the Toyotas on the truck side, on the car side, the incomparable Crown Vic, the Dodge Charger, the Chevy Impala, the Ford Police Sedan, and the Ford Police SUV, and they get them ready for you. They have the three-day peace of mind guarantee, so you buy with confidence, but the main thing is, especially if you're in business, fast financing for all credit levels at exgovernmenttrucks.com. Which means if you need a work truck, a van, or an SUV, you can get one right away. They also pay the highest values every day for trades. Ed Johnson at Ex-Government Cars has always told me, and I've seen him do it, you know what? It's not worth all the bull. If they bring something in, we'll pay the highest value for it, and they do it all the time. Ex-Government Cars, now open in Forest Lake, Minnesota at 356 19th Street, 356 19th Street, ExGovernmentCars.com, 763-777-8782. Listen to my creaky chair. Where's that bullhorn?
ExGovernmentCars.com.
Now, for people who say, you know, the scolds who say, well, this is not going to happen quickly. The Google and Apple have already invested in car companies in China and in the United States with an eye toward developing autonomous technologies. And I'm going to take a quick detour because SpaceX just put up a video of one of their rockets re-entering the atmosphere and landing on a launch pad. And it's a sped up video. And it's amazing when you consider a private company is launching reusable rockets and landing them on launch pads. Not NASA, not the government, not the Air Force, but private companies. So the idea that this wouldn't happen very quickly, look where SpaceX has come so quickly in like 10 years from basically struggling to having these reusable rockets. And that's just one example in one particular area, which is space technology. Uber is already testing its first driverless car in Pittsburgh. Now it has a driver to monitor the systems, but it drives itself and testing is coming before deployment. And the thing is, the media just keeps reporting that there was a driverless car accident in, you know, New Mexico or something, but it doesn't get into the fact that they are making steady progress on this. I talk about the video that I posted on my page with the guy that had, they've built a drone that can be operated by an individual. And, you know, it's just personal flight, basically. And it's probably going to be FAA approved. And they showed this guy flying this thing. So here's another disjointed piece, a story that I came up with. And I think this is an interesting story. So you hear lots of talk about manufacturing in this country on the campaign trail. You're hearing a lot of talk about that kind of stuff in Europe. And this is that all the jobs went to China and that we need to bring all the jobs back from China to the United States. And suddenly the people, the 94 million people who are out of the workforce will be employed at the steel mills and the coal mines and all will be well. And that's a nice idea. So it depends on who you talk to and it depends on what you look at in terms of charts, but manufacturing output is up in the United States and it's up in the United States with fewer employees. In fact, it's following the same track that agriculture followed at the turn of the century, meaning the 1900s, the turn of the 20th century. Most people in this country lived in farm towns and they were employed in some form of agriculture. And that changed very very much, but at the same time, agricultural output increased exponentially. And today, a very small number of farmers comparatively produce far more than they ever produced in the early 1900s. So it's going to be the same thing with manufacturing. Some futurists suggest that in the third wave of technology development, sometimes they call it the fourth wave or the second wave, but third wave will do in this sense, that in this third wave of technology development, collaborative efforts will spread from Silicon Valley into cheaper Rust Belt cities where there is already some degree of skill in certain areas. So Toledo is really good with metals, semiconductors in Albany. I don't know what Detroit, I suppose Detroit would be automotive, and to a lesser extent Chicago, and Gary and Cleveland will have to plan this. The other piece of this manufacturing thing is the cost of manufacturing in China, which is a former low-cost leader, are rising very quickly, and it's allowing space for new low-cost labor leaders like Vietnam to come in and enjoy a brief momentary advantage. But China is already investing in automation and robotics. I just mentioned that Foxconn, which is the maker of the iPhone in China, has already replaced 60,000 of its workers with robotics. So that's a piece. There are all sorts of tools being developed that are actually semi-autonomous. I guess you could call it that. I don't know what the actual technical term for it is, but I'm going to say it's semi-autonomous. This is a system where you combine elements of robotics with human beings. And the way this works, this is this thing called Beam. And what Beam does is it allows you to use robotic tools that can be attached to the system that moves around using teleconferencing, so you can move around a plant or a store or a facility, and you can see the thing that you're doing, and the thing that you're talking to or seeing can see what you're doing, but you've got all these other tools that you operate. In fact, they have a Beam store in San Francisco that is operated by people from remote locations. There's no human beings in the store. There are just these robotic things that are operated by people from remote locations all over the world. It's pretty interesting. So it's a robot video conference hybrid. And as I said, it's a robot body which can be fitted with tools and extra arms and, you know, operatives. The reason that they did this is that scientists said it's going to take us so long to get robots to be able to think as quickly and independently as human beings. What if we combined human beings with some sort of robotic technology?
Welcome. Please scan your first item.
The other thing is that across the country, we're seeing digital cashiers proliferate, like ATMs did 40 years ago, like self-serve gas did 40 years ago, except this time it's going to happen much quicker. They're going to be much more powerful, and it will change the basis of labor. And I could go on for hours about tech. Some of it is certainly pie in the sky, but much of it, a lot of it, is already happening. You know, they say you go from tech, you go from an idea and research to technology, and then technology to industry. And that is what we're in this phase where a lot of this stuff is being converted into industry. And some of it is pie in the sky, and some of it won't work, but some of it is going to begin to happen, and it's going to have profound effects on our world. And I'm mentioning this stuff, and I'm going to bring it all around to the political thing at the end of the podcast, because I think what's happening is we're not talking about this stuff. I see all this stuff on YouTube and on Instagram now. There's now an affordable 3D desktop printer that you can use to print designs from the internet, or you can use CAD apps to design your own stuff and print it at home, in chocolate if you want, from your smartphone. So the next iteration of smartphone technology will be faster and better, and then there will be more robust communications and communication systems. And those things have already disrupted the media. They're disrupting politics as well, as we have discussed. And I think they challenge the standard idea of what the city looks like and doesn't look like. So at this time, as the first edge of a real revolution is coming through, you hear people at Tea Party meetings talking about revolution, and you hear Black Lives Matter talking about revolution, and you hear La Raza talking about revolution, and you hear Bernie Sanders talking about revolution. This is a real revolution. This is a revolution that will probably have more impact in 50 years than the Industrial Revolution ever dreamed of having on its most hopeful day. And, you know, so some of that is, some of it's good because we can't see the opportunity that is going to be created, but we're definitely in the process of the beginning stages of a real, real revolution. So what are we doing to deal with this revolution? We're doing things like passing laws regarding higher minimum wage in state legislatures, and certainly we're doing things by executive order at the federal level regarding minimum wage and changing overtime rules so that people on lower wage scales or hour scales have to be paid more for overtime, and that's going to change the nature of how much corporations pay for people to do what they need to do, and you're going to see all sorts of adjustments of the labor force. We are seeing the adaptation of automation, electronic ordering, and cashier type of systems in service industries, just as people and politicians are demanding laws on minimum wages, just as unions are trying to organize, workers to prevent those systems from being put in place. And all the political and legal infrastructure of the city seems to be moving backward toward this early 20th century model. I wrote here, well, it could work very well, or it might fail spectacularly. Well, I don't think it will work very well. I think it is failing spectacularly in some places, and I think it will fail spectacularly in other places. I live in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and I hear all the time, we'll never be Detroit. Well, the thing is, Detroit's a good 100 years ahead of Minneapolis and St. Paul, so it's hard to tell whether we will be like Detroit or not if we continue to follow this idea of these highly expensive public infrastructure system with lots of employees, lots of rules, and lots of regulations, and, these sclerotic governmental systems. The problem is we're not allowing form to follow function. In other words, we're not forming systems in our state governments based on the function of these new tools. What we're doing is we're trying to force function to follow form. We're not creating structures that allow for flexibility. And I think that's so important. I've talked about, the Jeffersonian ideal of a very diffused republic, which kind of got thrown on the ash heap of history, but we kind of can pull it back because maybe that sort of libertarian vision of a very weak federal government and a very strong state system, more like the United Provinces back in the day in the Netherlands, might actually be the right system. The examples of the things we shouldn't be doing: more bureaucracy, not less. We need less bureaucracy. We've got to have more efficient government, which means less government, because we know that government as a rule is not efficient. If you want an example, the Affordable Care Act was supposed to create portable, manageable health insurance. And what we got is United Health pulling out because it's costing them too much. And we got the post office. And the solution? A bigger post office. Universal health care. We need entrepreneurs, and we need entrepreneurial thinking. Entrepreneurs are collaborative as individuals, and they operate as individuals, but they're willing to see the value in collaborating with people if it can help them make money, and they have to think creatively. And we are putting people through an education system that is still based on the 1950s at best, and it forces conformance. It forces the idea that we create skilled laborers who are high school graduates, and the college graduates are the middle managers in gray flannel whose job is to open and close the gate. And while all this is going on, the nature of employment itself is changing. People suddenly can be free agents. And I've talked about this 100 times in the podcast. I think it's one of the best things about this age. And we are at the very dawn of it, where a woman who's a mother can begin the transition out of her job by starting her own company on her kitchen table and promote it using all of the skills of social media and make her company look just like a huge company online. So these things are changing the nature of work. What is work? Where do I work? How do I work? How do I get there? And what's happening in return with that is the nature of the corporation is changing. Companies don't necessarily pay benefits or want to pay benefits anymore. They don't don't necessarily want to use full-time employees anymore because it's not the 1950s. You don't have a job for life, and you wouldn't want a job for life because something else is going to come up that's really cool that you're going to want to do. People use the tools available to them. If they're smart, they use their smartphone. They use cloud computing. They use sophisticated software to provide services or do what they do better. Whereas before they never had the chance to do that, or they're providing low tech services, you know, yoga teaching, in-home yoga teaching, massage, personal training, all this type of thing. But they're using high tech systems to market and schedule their work so that they can, again, amplify what it is that they do. So this is the beginning of a great age that we can do these things. Why wouldn't the driverless car? Why wouldn't the Jeffersonian system of diffused government be more effective for creating, a faster growth curve for these kinds of things so that we can all be happy? You know, there are just too many examples of how new technology is revolutionizing the old industrial world, whether it's making the same amount of steel that 5,000 guys on three shifts used to have to make with 12 or 13 or 50 people, or something like doing podcasts. Some call it the second industrial revolution or the third or fourth wave. Whatever its name, it is happening, and it is happening faster and faster and faster, and you see it in the politics. But the solutions being offered don't solve. They are right now, the solutions that all these people are offering really complicate everything. What we need to do is reset. We need to reset away from Republican and Democrat, away from right and left, away from right and wrong and independent. And very few see this. And I'm not saying throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm not saying throw your principles away. If you're on the left, your principles of, you know, being concerned about individuals and human beings and the forest and all that stuff. If you're on the right, the idea that the government should be curtailed. Don't throw the principles away. But let's talk about the new technology revolution that sweeps anything that doesn't work away. This is a river of change, and nothing will be the same once it starts to crest, and we are a long way from the crest yet. Lots of surprises are coming. And I think what I've been trying to say is that we need to change our minds, not them. We keep talking about them. They're doing this to us. They're doing that to us. It's we who need to change our minds. And we need to move away from centralized structures in our minds. And a lot of us have been raised with centralized structures. So we think in those terms. It doesn't mean we don't have regional planning or government structures, but maybe what changes is the authority of those regional planning capabilities from autocratic to being more collaborative with individual citizens. From saying this is the way it should be versus saying, hey, let's figure out something that works and see how we can work together and be a resource to people, whether you're a boss or whether you're the Met Council. Now, I hate to look at small countries and say, this is how it should be done, because the country I'm going to talk about only has 1.3 million people, which is basically a city-state, and this is the country of Estonia. But Estonia stands out from Eastern European former communist countries in a substantially different way in terms of economics. Estonia decided at the end of the Soviet Empire to completely break with the past and reset. And they really kept nothing of the old. They replaced their hoary old, socialist economy with a market-driven economy. They have an advanced tool in a computer system that allows all citizens unparalleled access to tax documents, data, other kinds of federal documents. They can get licenses and permits in hours in Estonia that take weeks, months, or years in other countries, including the United States. And just as an aside, on the same front, Chile is also doing some amazing things. You know, Chile has, or Chile, as I used to call it, has a completely privatized social security system that people manage themselves from ATMs. In Estonia, children as young as 7 are taught the principles and basics of coding. You hear all this talk about the ghetto in this country and the low-income areas and the education, and these education structures are impossible. You can't fix these schools because there's so much legal corruption in the school systems. Nobody ever talks about teaching kids in low-income areas like like Compton and North Minneapolis. Let's teach these kids. Let's take them out of the system, put them somewhere, and start over and teach them how to code immediately. Let's just go take it to the next level and see what happens. Estonia has the most competitive tax system in the world. They have a 21% corporate tax rate. They have a nearly flat 21% personal income tax rate. They allow companies a full expensing of capital investment, which is tax-free. But as soon as you start giving the money out in dividends, then it's taxed. So it encourages companies putting money back into the companies. They use blockchain encryption for medical and financial data for individuals. So their financial and medical data system is like Bitcoin. And it provides a good base if they ever wanted to move to a Bitcoin type of currency. And then finally, this is a place where a lot of new tech companies are headquartering, and it's easy for you or me as a citizen of the United States. We could actually become citizens of Estonia very easily. So it's also kind of a cyber country in an odd sort of way. Now, I'm not suggesting that a country of 350 million people can become Estonia, and I don't think we would want to become Estonia, but look at the ideas that they're working with, and look at the ideas that we're working with. Individual states could start experimenting with these ideas. Why not Minnesota? Why not? Let's talk about fixing education by resetting it completely. Why not starting to teach kids in the lowest income areas how to code, for example? Why not move to a flat state tax? Why not streamline state agencies? Why not, as opposed to this is how we've always done it before, or this is the way these systems have to be done, or let's have some more bureaucracy, or let's hire some more employees to do things. Why not put plans for centralized planning agencies and institutions like Minsure and Light Rail, for example, on hold in the short term and maybe get rid of them in the long term? Because I think we're heading in a certain direction, and I think our leaders think that we're headed in a different direction, and that is not a recipe for success. So these are the things I think we should be talking about in our discourse, not whether or not the Cincinnati Zoo shot a gorilla. Because honestly, I really don't care about the gorilla. Anyway, just a thought. Got to thank the digital sponsor of the BobDavisPodcast.com with my creaky chair. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, I talk about it all the time, but the reality is a visual indicator of your angle of attack when you turn on final approach is critical. This is where lives are saved by the FAA-approved Alpha Systems angle of attack indicator. Click on the Alpha Systems banners at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. It'll take you to their page. Lots of information about what it does, how it works, and why it is revolutionary. In fact, Alpha Systems started the angle of attack revolution in aviation. And thanks you guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast digital side. Thanks for listening to Podcast 506. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating for Business. Talked a lot about business in this podcast, especially individuals in business for themselves, entrepreneurs. For four generations, Ryan Plumbing and Heating has taken care of businesses all up and down University Avenue and in St. Paul. They go metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs too. If you're in business, you have emergency service, if you have something you need to get done with air conditioning or heating systems or plumbing, call Ryan Plumbing, 651-224-4771. If you're in Minneapolis, you can call 612-927-6488. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Lots of great plumbing content. If you're interested, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Also, a business shout out to ex-government cars and ex-governmenttrucks.com, now open in Forest Lake, Minnesota at 356 19th Street. They got the Fords, the Chevys, the Dodges, the Toyota trucks. They got the Chargers. They got the Chevy Impalas. They got the Ford Police sedans, the Ford Police SUVs, the Expeditions, the Yukons. It's all good. And they have the 3-day peace of mind guarantee. They have the fast financing for all credit levels, and they pay the highest values for trades. It's worth it if you're in business to check out if you need a work truck, an SUV, or van, xgovernmentcars.com in Forest Lake, 763-777-8782, xgovernmentcars.com. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, which is great for Samsung, any kind of Android device, the granddaddy of podcasting, iTunes or TuneIn. And thank you for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. And also, as my friend Ken Madden calls it, my Zen social media, and that is Instagram, where I am the Bob Davis Podcasts. And also thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com for Mobile Podcast Command. I'm debating on whether I should go to South Dakota for the final primary, which would be the closest state for me next week. So I'm still thinking about that. And your donations power Mobile Podcast Command with diesel fuel and Komodo Dragon coffee and new tires and other stuff. So I really, really appreciate them. You make a donation by clicking on the donate button at thebobdavispodcast.com page right underneath the picture of Mobile Podcast Command. And thanks for subscribing and listening right on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. All right, I've gone on too long. I'm going to go out on the deck and relax for the rest of the night. Podcast 506.